Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Right Stream Radio Network, rejoicing in the flow of creativity. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Right Stream and hashtag Right Stream. Thanks for listening to the Right Stream Radio Network.
Welcome to Right Stream Tuesday. This is your host, Daria Ann, and I am an independent author, blogger, ghostwriter, editor, social media marketer, and founder of the Right Stream Radio Network here on Blog Talk Radio. And I'm really excited about our show today, which I'm going to tell you about here in just a minute. But just as a reminder, I want to let everybody know that the Right Stream Radio Network actually broadcasts currently four shows, but it's about to be five with the addition of a new show, Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss, making its debut this Friday night at 7 p.m. Eastern. I'm going to be co-hosting that with Just Believe host Lisa Tarvez and her daughter Kristen Fetterman, and it's going to be a fun women's lifestyle show where we're going to talk about everything from relationships and family to holidays to fashion and skincare and everything in between. So we are debuting Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss this Friday at 7 p.m. Eastern, and I hope you will tune in and then join us every Friday for a fun, happy hour. But also, just to let everyone know, in case you're not familiar with RightStream, we launched the network in March of this year, and we started off with Just Believe with Lisa Tarvez, which airs every Sunday now at 7 p.m. Eastern. She started out at 1 p.m. on Sundays, and we decided to change the time. So she now airs every Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern, covering pretty much all aspects of the metaphysical, holistic healing, spirituality, paranormal. Lisa has a show that really covers a wide spectrum of things pertaining to health and wellness, the supernatural, spiritual. She's interviewed everybody from ghost hunters to angelic communicators, chiropractors, reflexologists, and it's a great show. She always has interesting guests. And if you've missed any of them, you can go to blogtalkradio.com/rightstream and listen to the archives. And then on Mondays, John D. Gresham, who is a military historian and journalist and author of 15 books, hosts Military Monday, and that's every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern John, if for anyone who doesn't know, I mean, he is just a wealth of knowledge about the U.S. military, and he's often called upon to participate as a consultant in various military specials. So don't be surprised someday if you turn on the Discovery Channel or the Military History Channel or the History Channel and see John giving an interview, because he's so knowledgeable and he's so good at his work that he's often called upon to participate in various military documentaries. So tune into John for Military Monday on the Rightstream Radio Network at 1 p.m. Eastern on Mondays. And then, of course, I host Rightstream Tuesday every Tuesday at 1 p.m. In my show, we kind of cover a variety of authors, all kinds of genres, from science fiction to memoir to historical romance, pretty much everything. I love to talk to different authors. I love the whole process of writing and publishing and the creative process, which is so unique for everyone. And it's really interesting to talk to different authors about how they promote their work and how they write and how they discipline themselves and really stick to it. So join me every Tuesday for Rightstream Tuesday. And then on Wednesday evenings, Dr. Billy Eisenberg, who is a licensed clinical psychologist in South Florida, and family law attorney Sheena Benjamin Wise, who is based in Pompano Beach, Florida, they co-host a program called Family Power Hour, which is really a call-in talk show format where they encourage listeners to share their best practices on everything involving human relationships, from raising kids to marriage to dating. They even had a show last week, which was actually very sobering, on human trafficking. They had an expert on in that topic. And if you've missed any of their shows, again, or any of the shows on the Rightstream Radio Network, go to blogtalkradio.com/Rightstream and you can check them out. And as I said, Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss debuts this Friday, 7 p.m. Eastern, and that brings our total programming to 5 shows a week. So we're very excited about that. We have a lot of plans to grow the network in the new year, and I invite you to check out our website, rightstreamradio.com. Follow us on Twitter at Rightstream and hashtag Rightstream, and join us every week for Rightstream Wednesday, hashtag WSW on Twitter, where we do a one-hour chat at 1 p.m. Eastern, all on Twitter, all done through typing. And tomorrow, Lisa and I will be running that chat, and we'll be talking about this week's debut of Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss, as well as the guest we have in store for our first show. So join us for all of that. Okay, well, without further ado, I am really excited to welcome Lori Colombo Dunham to the program today. In full disclosure, Lori's been a friend of mine for several years. Gosh, I think we met back in 1996 or 1997. Hard to believe how time flies. And Lori hired me a couple of years ago to pen her new book, Reflections on the Ring, An Ordinary Woman's Extraordinary Tale of How She Saved Her Marriage and Family. And this was really, this has to be one of my favorite collaborations. I've worked on several projects, ghostwriting projects and editing projects, but this has been by far probably my favorite book project that I've worked on so far. And it was, you know, the whole collaborative process, and I want to talk about that with Lori today too at some point. It's very different from writing your own book, but you learn a lot, and it's challenging, and it's fun, and I think for myself it's made me a better writer and hopefully a better listener. And, you know, one of the challenges of the ghostwriter is taking yourself out of it, sort of like a paradox. You're writing, but you have to write in such a way that you're reflecting that you are the other person's voice, the author's voice, and it can be very challenging. So we'll get into that today as well. But there's so many good messages in this book. It's such a tonic, especially given the culture that we're living in, where it's sort of like this culture of convenience and me first and tends to be a little bit superficial, or if not superficial, certainly frantic with all kinds of obligations and work obligations and new media and television and just, you know, all the messages that are constantly coming at us all day long. It can be really hard. It can be very easy to lose sight of what's really important. So I think a book like Lori's is so needed in our culture today, and we're going to talk about that too. But before I bring her on the air, I just want to read from the synopsis, which you can find at her website, reflectionsonthering.wordpress.com. writestream.com. And while there, you can also find some reviews of the book. We've already had some really wonderful reviews. There are more to come. You can find out where to purchase the book as well and a little bit more about Lori. But here we go with the synopsis. Most women harbor dreams of a fairy tale wedding and marriage. And while some do achieve it all, they are in the minority. For most of us, the reality of living out our daily lives with another person by our side demands compromise, cooperation, and commitment. Yes, it takes two to make a marriage, but someone has to take the lead. Why not let that person be you? That's the timeless life lesson author Lori Colombo Dunham learned when an unplanned pregnancy rocked her entire world back in 2001. Having only known her baby's father for a short time, she agonized as to what God's plan would be for her marriage and family once she and her partner decided that embarking upon an unanticipated marital union was the right thing to do under the circumstances. So she tearfully bid her girlhood dreams of an elegant church wedding, complete with breathtaking white gown, horse-drawn carriage, and spectacular reception goodbye, to exchange vows in a sterile county courthouse, wearing black and mourning for what could have been. Little did she know that inauspicious beginning would lead to a magnificent, fulfilling marital and family life beyond her wildest dreams. God did indeed have a plan, and it was perfect. Told in a refreshingly honest and engaging style, Reflections on the Ring, an ordinary woman's extraordinary tale of how she saved her marriage and family, will make you laugh, cry, and discover the perfection within life's seeming imperfections. Best of all, if you're seeking to renew your own marriage, Dunham's faith-filled journey will inspire you to emulate her example. So without further ado, I welcome to WriteStream Tuesday author Lori Colombo Dunham. Hey, Lori.
Hi, Daria.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Well, this is pretty exciting for me, you know, just given that we were both involved in this project. And before we go any further, though, I want to give you an opportunity to introduce yourself to our audience in your own words, and then we'll get into talking about the book.
You know, go for it. I mean, you know what, this has just been so exciting. The whole journey with you has been more than I could ever ask for, something that's been on my heart and on my mind for years, and then able to actually not only put it on paper but then into print has been amazing. It's an amazing process.
Oh, it's been a fun journey for me too, Lori. And I just think your book is so needed in our culture today. And I just, you know, just the, not only on the personal level, just the personal and spiritual growth that you went through, you know, throughout this whole process that you had the courage to put down on paper, but, you know, just the messages that come through in your book. But I think without being preachy or talking down to people, but just, you know, you were so honest and down to earth about the things you went through. So tell us a little bit about, I mean, just what really motivated you to want to write about all this, to one, not only write about it, but two, share it with the rest of the world?
To be honest, Daria, what had happened first was it was starting off to be just a personal cleansing. I mean, I was just, so often we all just write in our journals to process what we're thinking or feeling. And as I was writing it, writing out more and more, I started realizing what I had. I felt like I had a story that might be able to help a marriage. So I was motivated to put that more into more of a thought and layout, and it came to me like almost instantly that I wanted to be entertaining, I wanted to be resourceful more than anything, and I wanted to be spiritual because that is really what made the difference in my life. So once I realized what I wanted to do, I contacted you.
Yeah, and the rest is history. Well, you know, speaking of that, it was an interesting process because you and I, gosh, was it like 2 or 3 years ago that we first sat down and started working on it?
You know, it was definitely a slow process. I mean, the book's not long. It's an easy read, and I think it was such a long process because I was also dealing with moving forward with this. I mean, it's always something that I kind of harbored and felt that this is my own little, my family's own little secret, you can so to say, and once me actually having to put it down on paper, talking about it, that took several steps into just being able to take that one more leap into putting this all out there.
Yeah, which is really like a leap of faith, you know, and it's understandable given the intensely personal, you know, subject matter. To put yourself out there is not easy, and I mean, I commend you for that. It was very courageous. So, do you want to tell the story? Because I think, you know, we had finished at least a rough draft, and you, I remember you said to me, you know what, I'm just not ready to move forward. Let's just, you know, let's just leave it here for now. And it wasn't until, what, about 6 or 8 months ago that something happened, and you said, you called me up and you said, you know what, I think I'm ready to move forward. So share with the audience what that was, that experience, what that was like.
If you're thinking what I'm thinking, that was at the moment with Gianna, my oldest daughter?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, we were actually almost done. I mean, you wanted to pretty much close it up, and I'm thinking, no, it's not. I mean, my heart is just not comfortable with what we have here. And I kind of put it aside and left everything just hanging out there. And I kept thinking and praying, like, you know, it's going to come, it's going to come. And I'm sure all writers have a block or they just don't feel something's right, and they kind of just stop, and they're stuck, and that's where I was. And I just let it go. I was like, you know what, maybe everything that I had, I was done. Maybe this was all I needed to do, and maybe God was just telling me, you know what, you're able to get out what you had to get out, and you can move forward. And then, like you said, it was like 6 to 8 months later, my family, my children, husband, and I, we write out our daily goals most nights, and it's a three-step process. It's 10 things that you are grateful for, 3 things that made you happy in the last 24 hours, and then what you're earning for. What are your goals, short or long-term goals? You have to write them out. And we say these to each other out loud. And Gianna, my eldest, you know, always excited to say the first, you know, I'll be the first one to read hers. And she started off reading hers, and her first one of that night was my birth. And she kept going on, you know, my birth, daddy's love, whatever, you know, whatever it was for that week. And I just stood there, and I just started having tears down my eyes. I was like, oh, my goodness. You know, here she is, 10, 11 years old, and I think her life has just gone full circle. And, like, they're looking at me, it's like, why are you, what's wrong? It's like, oh, nothing. And at that moment when she said my birth is something I am so grateful for, it brought me back 11 years prior to the doctor's office when I was confirmed that I was pregnant with her. And it was unbelievable how that was my closure. That was my closure for the book to show, you know what, everything happens for a reason, and we're here at this moment to honor her, you know, and to have her be blessed that she's here with us today.
Yeah, wow. That's like, yeah, that's just, that's powerful. And, you know, I'm thinking back to the scene in the book at the doctor's office, and, you know, where, and Laura, you make a point, too, in the book, and you know, you raised with traditional values, but you know, at the time, you were in your 30s, and you were kind of, like, at the point where, well, you know, this isn't necessarily the traditional thing to do, but I'm going to adopt because I really want to be a mom. And so tell us a little bit about the, because you had some sort of mixed emotions there when you found out, you and your husband hadn't been dating that long, and then you find out that you're pregnant, and you kind of went through a series of emotions. Can you just clarify that for the audience a little bit?
Well, I mean, when you read the book, you'll see that my life was in many scenarios, you know, coming and going and many times, but I always knew I wanted to be a mother. Whether I was married or not married, I wanted to raise children, and I wasn't going to go for a donor, so I was going to adopt. And so I was getting my life all set up for adoption, and then I met Dave, and before I knew it, I was pregnant. And so I was thrilled I was going to have a child. The question was, is what am I going to do? I mean, what do I do with this child and myself and this man that I had barely knew? And that's when it came, you know, and that's when my traditions, you know, kicked into high gear.
Yeah, and you know, and to his credit, I mean, Dave had always had wanted to be a father. I mean, he was thrilled with the news about the baby, and the bone of contention, I guess, was whether to make this a marital union or a sort of let's move in together type of scenario, correct?
Well, you know, I mean, you're talking, what, 2000, 2001, I mean, it's definitely, live-ins were extremely common, and him not being raised the same way I was, he just, oh, I'm thrilled. We're going to have a baby together. This is great. You know, we're going to move in together. My mother, which is a whole, you know, scenario in itself, had a whole other agenda for us, and it had to be executed. And that's when he balked the system, not in actions, but in attitude.
Yes, the matriarch spoke.
Yes.
Go ahead, sorry.
No, she demanded. I don't know. I don't know how much you want me to tell you about. You know, one of the cliff is in this book is telling my mother and all that it took. It took two of us, and it wasn't my soon-to-be husband. It was my brother and I that had to tell my mother. And you're talking about a 78-year-old lady that you have to tell her that her baby daughter of 34 years is expecting, and she's not married. And lo and behold, you know, you still don't, you know, vacation with somebody, and you still don't sleep in the same bedroom if you're engaged until you're married. And so when she did find out that I was pregnant, it was, when are you getting married? You know, this has to be done immediately. And I had to march back to Florida and let him know that this has to be the case.
Yes, it's funny now looking back. I mean, Lori, you and I come from similar backgrounds, and I just, having been through some of this with you, or having been around and knowing, you know, watching this kind of play out, I thought, you know, this is terrible. But my first reaction was, oh my gosh, I'm so relieved it's not me, because, you know, just dealing with having to disappoint, you know, it's not so much, yeah, they would be angry, but it's more the, I think the guilt factor, and, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, for me, it would be more just the thought of just disappointing my mother like that, you know, and just hurting her in that way by sort of, you know, acting in a way that was counter to everything I was raised. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, how many ways can you disappoint your mother? I mean, there's only a few. I mean, prison time, premarital pregnancy, and I don't know, is there anything else that, you know, good to tell your mom you could destroy her?
Yeah. And
I mean, there's only two that I can think of, and, you know, I got one out of two. But, you know, how many men today are willing to be sheeplessly, you know, take that altar because the future mother-in-law is demanding it? I mean, most guys would probably run.
Yeah.
If she's going to be this controlling now, what's going to be happening down the road?
You know, that is such a great point, and we bring that out in the story, too. I mean, you really, you know, you started off with a really good, decent man who, even though he wasn't traditionally religious in the, you know, let's go to church every Sunday kind of sense, still lives his life by biblical principles like the Ten Commandments and holds himself to those standards. But, you know, that's a great point. But, Lori, you know, one of the funniest things, I mean, I think, for me as the writer, you know, as helping you write it, one of the funniest parts, and I'm sure it wasn't really funny at the time for you, you know, getting married, but, you know, just this scene where you're kind of going to the courthouse and now instead of this, you know, traditional elegant wedding scenario with the church and the beautiful reception, you know, you're driving to a sterile county courthouse and, you know, and Dave just, you know, the one particular scene I'm thinking of that's funny is with the flowers. Involving a special lady, and if you want to just share a little bit of that with the audience, because I think it's one of the, you know, funnier aspects of the book, which we really did try to infuse with a lot of humor.
No, I'm glad you thought that was funny. You know, I mean, God bless my husband. He, you know, we're driving to the courthouse, and your mind is spinning, and you're reflecting back on your life, the shoulda, coulda, wouldas in life, and we're driving, and just one step after the other just kept getting worse and worse. You know, you're in the courthouse. You're now in this waiting room, and then you're in a white, like you said, it was sterile. I mean, tacky white flowers, I think, maybe over an arch. You know, just some guy behind the corner of the counter that comes around and says your vows, which I kept reflecting back. I mean, I was holding back tears thinking, oh, my goodness, if my mother saw this, she would be dying right now. I mean, just crush her even more. But, you know, I had to do something right, and being raised Catholic and the traditions that we have spoken about, I figured, you know, at least one thing I can do. We have, my church happened to be across the street, so I had bought a bouquet of flowers. And, you know, Dave's thinking they were for me, but, you know, I had left them in the car, and he kind of forgot or didn't realize that I had left them in the car. So we're walking to the car, and I just start screaming. It's like, the flowers, the flowers. It's like, it's over with. I mean, what do you need? I go, I need the flowers. Like, for what? I'm like, I gotta go across the street. I gotta go to the flowers. And he's like, for what? To who? What are you talking about? And it's like, I need the flowers. So he goes and he gets them. You know, he hands them to me, and I'm marching across the street to the church, and he's following behind. And he's so confused. He's like, I don't understand. He goes, I guess so. I go, I got to go give the flowers to the Blessed Mother. He looks at me. He's like, who? I'm just like, oh, my God. Oh, my goodness. It's like, you did not just say that. And I think I just kept walking with tears rolling down my eyes. And so, you know, I did my thing. At the church, you know, I presented her with the flowers, my prayers. I'm crying. Why are you so sad? I was like, oh, where am I into? So he's come a long way. But he was always supportive from the very beginning. I mean, no matter what the scenario was, I have to say he was supportive of me, of my feelings and my needs.
Yeah, and that's something, and that's very poignant, because that's something that we pointed out in the book, that even though, okay, he didn't know who Blessed Mother was, didn't understand what was going on, he still supported you, and I think that's something you did very well in the book in bringing that out, whether he understood fully what was going on or not. So, again, you know, you started with a good, decent man, and you know, which didn't mean everything was perfect. I mean, it was certainly not in the beginning, but.
You know, and you say that, you know, he was a good, decent man, and he was, and I contribute that to his mother and his father. I mean, honestly, I look at the young boys today, and I watch how they're being raised, you know, so I see what my children are going to be mirroring in the future, and it's definitely, you know, who are their role models at a young age, because this is who they're going to be. By age 12, your values, your morals are in place. Who's raising them? And my husband had some great people in his corner raising him.
Yeah, no, that's key. Absolutely. Lori, I wanted to talk about how we, you know, because you mentioned the flowers for the Blessed Mother, and that just kind of reminded me. You know, what we try to do with the book, too, is we sort of created a little bit of a fictional framework around it, even though it really is your story. And the scenario being, because I want to make, because you made a point about the culture today, and I kind of want to make this larger point, too, in terms of weddings. It just seems that, and look, I'd love, you know, we all dream of a beautiful church wedding. I mean, I'm no exception to that. But I think in our culture today, it's gotten so extreme. Weddings are so expensive, and we see, like, these movies about bridezillas and these shows on TV, these reality shows where the whole meaning of this marital union is completely lost, and people are obsessed with the size of the ring, you know, the size of your diamond, what kind of gown you have, you know, just all of the trappings of a wedding. And certainly we're not saying that people shouldn't have beautiful weddings if that's what you want. I'm just making the point where I feel like things have gotten so upside down that people forget the real meaning of what the wedding signifies. And you know, so in the book we set up sort of that scenario where there's a mom's night out group that you attend, and on this particular occasion they're going to be showing everybody their wedding albums, and as sort of like the precursor to you telling your story, sort of in a quote-unquote public confession. But what do you think of, I mean, what do you make of that, about what's going on with our culture in terms of, Just I don't know, the way that people get divorced so easily, and the way that there's so much emphasis on the wedding versus the marriage, you know, what are your thoughts about that?
Well, honestly, I have to say, Dave came to this marriage with a lot of great rules. He said he was married twice, and I will only be married once. He said we talk and respect to one another, and we never criticize one another in public, and we talk out our differences. So that, you know, says a lot about the marriage. About the day, you know, once he realized how upset I was at the day that we had for our wedding, he looked at me and he's like, wouldn't you rather have a beautiful life than a beautiful day? And that constantly plays out in my mind as I see, you know, whether my girlfriends or these women now that have their daughters getting married, and I just keep saying, and it's always been my motto, it's like, you know what, if you're willing to marry this man and be out on the street in a cardboard box with him because he lost everything, then go for it. But don't marry him because life is good right now, or you think you can change him, because people don't change. They are who they are. And the good times and the bad times, I mean, it could be turn on a dime, you can lose everything. So you're going to be able to have to be strong enough and love this person enough to make it work. It's the parties. I mean, everyone's into parties. I mean, that bridal day, that wedding day is the perfect party for a celebration where more people are getting married with just the justice of the peace, out on the beach or somewhere. I mean, they're missing the whole spiritual side of it, and it's becoming less important. I mean, you know, how quick it is. Well, we can always get a divorce, you know, is such a nonchalant comment, unfortunately. But, I mean,
yeah.
I think that's my feelings, where people are just, they're not holding truth to their vows.
No, yeah, that's absolutely true, and it's sad when there's children involved and they have that, you know, kind of cavalier attitude. And of course, again, just as a little disclaimer, which we mentioned in the book, we're not talking about, you know, if you get married and the person ends up abusing you, that you should stay there. That is not what this is about. This is just a general sense of what's going on in our culture today, where it's just too easy to walk away when things get a little tough, when maybe the money gets tight or somebody loses their job or you know, something happens. That challenges the union.
Yeah, no, you know, something that breaks my heart the most is when someone tells somebody, yeah, they were bored in the marriage, so they want a divorce. They're just tired of being married. I mean, that just hurts. When there's children involved, it breaks my heart. It's like your immaturity is gonna take over. I mean, your family and your children. That one hurts. There's no question about that. I know, obviously, if there's abuse. But, I mean, also people feel like, oh, it's too late. I can't stop the wedding now. I mean, absolutely not. You have up until the I do. You could be on that aisle. I mean, we all see it in the movies. People end up not marrying. So it's never too late. You just have to have that courage. I mean, I know I was engaged prior to Dave, and this man loved me, and I had everything that you could possibly dream of. But I didn't love him. There was no way I was going to make it my whole life with this person. And I ended up breaking up with him. And that, I think, was one of the hardest things I had to do because I was hurting a good person. But, boy, it would have been a whole lot uglier if I had waited out. You know, either I would have been miserable and ended up wanting a divorce, or it would have been an ugly life together.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, and that took a tremendous amount of courage, Lori, to do that, to do the right thing. I mean, it's not the right thing is often the most difficult thing to do.
I have to agree, and so many people are losing strength and courage to do the right thing.
Yeah. Now, let's talk a little bit about, you know, we mentioned rings, just a little bit, you know, kind of alluding to the title of the book a little bit. There's one ring in particular that had a big, actually the person who owned the ring, I should say. So tell us a little bit about, you know, the inspiration for the book's title in terms of your Nana.
My Nana had her engagement ring and her wedding band, and when she died, that following Christmas, my mother gave my sister and I each a ring, and I held it, and I just thought, this is great. I mean, I'm such a traditionalist, like, gosh, can you imagine this will be my wedding ring one day? You know, and I go and I put it away all tucked up, not forgetting the whole fact that I was going to get married in about 5 months. With, you know, and it's like, wait a minute, you know, not even realizing the two rings couldn't even possibly go together, but that's a whole other side of a story. But my grandmother, I was able to have a great relationship with her because after I had moved away out of Michigan and then came back, well, when I was out of Michigan, I realized I missed her, and I missed her stories and her information. And so what happened is when I came back, I made a commitment to visit her once a week. So on Tuesdays, I would visit my grandmother. And the stories that she would share with me were just full of history and experiences that she had overcome. You know, a third grade education, surviving as a young widow, three children, caring for them. She taught me that anything is possible. Just take responsibility and do the right thing, and it'll all work out. So with my ring, which also had belonged to her mother, so it was my great-grandmother's, my grandmother's, and now I was able to wear it. Through those conversations and that time spent with her, she really had a transfusion in me. She definitely changed me in so many ways. And when I was with Dave, we could not afford rings. So fortunately, my dream came true. I got my grandmother's wedding ring for my ring. And I used that. That was kind of like, you know, people have those worry beads. They twist and they turn and they're thinking. I guess that would be my worry bead. I mean, I just constantly look at it and reflect it and think about her reaction and what would she do and just stay fast to what's true. And so that was my constant reflection, was on her ring.
Yeah, that is awesome. And that wisdom, that sort of that timeless wisdom that really, you know, we call it old-fashioned, but it's really timeless. And, you know, we talk a lot about your grandmother in the book and her influence on you and how, you know, how she always remained true to her values and what was important, hard work and individual charity and picking yourself up by the bootstraps, which all of which we talk about in the book.
But honestly, Daria, I think that was that generation. I mean, they lived through the Depression. They're either immigrants or they've been here, you know, second, third generation in this country. You know, it's always about hard work. The problem I see is that the younger generations, we don't tap into our elderly. I mean, the Japanese culture, they do. They respect their elderly. They care for them. They honor them. The respect, it doesn't even come close to how we handle our elderly population, the grandparents. I mean, how many children sit and communicate and play board games with their grandparents? I mean, the kids are off doing their electronics or their kids are off playing. They're not sitting talking to their grandparents. And that's not, and I don't even mean children, even adult children. I think you can pull so much out from your grandparents or any elderly person.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I had mentioned this before. I mean, the only grandparent I knew was my grandmother, whose engagement ring I was given, and I wear it all the time. But she died when I was six. But it's like, you know, even though I was so young, I mean, she still made such an impression on me that I think about her all the time. And kind of the same thing, just like you're saying. But I think, you know, those are also the values that made this a great country. I mean, once upon a time, you know, self-reliance was upheld as something that was expected and certainly respect of all age groups. And I feel like in our culture today, whether we're talking about, you know, the innocent unborn or the elderly at the other end of the life spectrum, there is such a lack of life, and it's kind of like you're considered disposable, which is, not only is it immoral, it's tragic.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully, you know, somebody will wake up and realize, you know, that there's the value there, and we have to tap into it.
Yeah, now, Lori, you know, one of the misperceptions I see when I talk to different girlfriends or I hear, not just women, but, I mean, when I'm around women especially, though, you know, is there's this perception that somehow, like, everything has to be perfect, and if, my God, you get a surprise pregnancy and you don't have X amount of dollars in the bank, well, then just get an abortion because, you know, you can't raise a baby on that little money. And, you know, and I've tried to get a word in edgewise on some of these conversations, not always possible, but I've always thought to myself, I mean, how sad. I mean, life is not perfect. And I mean, you could have five kids and be a millionaire with a successful company and lose it on a dime and become bankrupt and have no money. And that doesn't, you know, the value of life does not hinge upon outside circumstances like that. And certainly in your book, I mean, you and Dave went through a lot of financial struggles and, you know, never once did that ever occur to you. So speak to that a little bit. And what are your thoughts on that as far as how our culture deems the unborn and unexpected pregnancies today?
Well, oh, I have so many comments on this. First, I want to say, you know, what's driving our society? And that's the media. You have the movies, the television, music, the news, you know. Parents are an influence, but the media, I mean, it's so strong. And they just take it as it's a scenario that you can wrap it up and spin it around any which way you want. But then you get the politicians involved. And they've legislated it where, you know, they're now into our personal matters, and they use it as an agenda. So they're out passing out the condoms or the birth control pills, saying, you know, go off, go have sex, no big deal. Don't get pregnant because here we're going to give you these little tools. But if you do, well, don't worry, we got an answer for that too. And so that's where our society has come to accept it. And it's all about the instant gratification, which we have also wrapped up into our lives. So you have the instant gratification, so you have the casual sex, and no repercussions because there's an answer for whatever happens. And that's a problem. So I guess my whole point with the whole premarital sex would be why? Why are, you know, the youth, whether it's teenagers, young adults, acting out where irresponsibly? You have to be responsible. So whether, you know, it depends on what stage you're at in this scenario. Are you an adult? Do you have your career that you're able to, because I know we're talking about finances here, but I mean, are you under government assistance? Are you able to take care of yourself? So I guess let's look at it that way. And then if you're under government assistance, maybe you need to learn how to say no to drugs and say no to sex. Then mm-hmm. we can move on forward. If you can't take care of yourself, then you can't take care of others. So it's not a matter of abortion or no abortion. It should be sex or no sex. And I think that's where our society needs to go to.
Oh, I agree. I mean, you know, there's an old saying, you know, just because the plumbing is there doesn't mean the house is ready to occupy. And sex isn't just about the physical, but it's about the emotional. And I think if you're not – my rule is if you're not mature enough to handle the potential consequences, then you shouldn't be having sex in the first place. You know, one of the things I find ironic, Lori, and I'll let you jump back in here, is that for all the caterwauling about, oh, government stay out of the bedroom, well, I find that highly ironic because the government is in the bedroom by forcing taxpayers to fund birth control and abortion, whether they agree with that or not. And it does get down to the way people are raised and holding yourself to a higher standard. And, of course, pop culture and the media – and this has been going on for decades, have been really busy sort of disassociating kids from the values of their parents, assuming that the parents still hold on to these old-fashioned values.
No question. I mean, I don't know if you remember who Dr. Elders was. Do you remember her? She was President Clinton's general surgeon. And everyone was mocking her and laughing at her, but she was right. She wanted to teach abstinence. She was... You know, how she delivered her beliefs, I think that's what everyone was able to mock her on, but her message was clear, no sex. I mean, and that will bring down your teenage pregnancies, your irresponsible pregnancies. I mean, nobody wants to have an abortion. I can't believe they're choosing it, but do they really want it? I mean, they've come to terms perhaps, and maybe I'm speaking out of place here, that whether it's friends have influenced them, whether it's a case manager has influenced them. I mean, where are they getting this influence that having an abortion is okay, go for it, just do it? You know,
mm-hmm.
it's mind-boggling. And I know that there's more organizations out there trying to help single women keep their baby and be self-responsible. And you're right, Daria. I mean, I didn't lose my virginity until I was in my mid-20s. I mean, when I felt like I was responsible for whatever actions may have happened. So I think, again, people have to learn how to take on personal responsibility for their actions.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And, you know, Lori, and there are so many wonderful private, I will say, organizations. A lot of them are faith-based, but that does not mean that the woman has to have any particular faith. That will, without judging, will take these women in, and whether they choose to keep the baby or choose to give them up for adoption, which to me is the most selfless thing to do. If you really can't afford it, rather than destroying that child's life, having the courage to be able to say, you know what, I'm going to go and I'm going to have this charity assist me in placing this child in a home where, you know, this childless couple would love nothing more than to be the opportunity to raise him or her. You know,
but Daria,
you mentioned, yes.
Okay. Well, not to interrupt there, but I mean, you're absolutely right. The problem is that you have the politicians who are passing out the birth controls and offering up the abortions, but then you have the folks who cannot have children who would love to adopt, but they're so afraid to adopt in the U.S., and all their responses
right.
are the same. We're afraid we may lose this child in the court system down the road.
Yep.
Why are the politicians not involved in that aspect? Blows my mind.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right, Lori. The other aspect of this, too, that is never talked about, especially by the left, I mean, in this country, is, you know, and I can tell you from personal experience, I've met – in the course of my lifetime, I would say at least 10 women who have been psychologically damaged by abortion. And nobody wants to reach out. Those who think abortion is wonderful, I'll say, or support it, these women are conveniently sort of left out of the conversation by people who claim to be pro-woman. And I could tell you, I would never name them. These are good people, and they live with the guilt every day of what they've done. And, you know, one of them's had more than one woman that I'm thinking of in particular. And it's been psychologically devastating to her. And I feel like that's also missing in the conversation about abortion, aside from the fact, too, that it is major surgery. And, you know, in the case of a minor, where these schools now, I mean, you know, federally run schools are trying to keep parents completely out of the equation where, you know, the kid can have an abortion without the parent's knowledge, but yet you can't give them an aspirin in school without the parent's knowledge. I mean, it's so screwed up, it's not even funny. You know? So, anyway, I just wanted to make that point because I feel bad for these women, but you're absolutely right about the court system. I mean, there have been some high-profile cases, and I'm sure there's more than we even know about, where, what was that one, like, several years ago? I mean, the kid was, like, 3 years old and was yanked from the adoptive parents.
It was about 10, 15 years ago. I know which one you're talking about. Mm-hmm. I think that was up in Michigan, too. Yeah, absolutely. The woman had raised this baby for 3 years. I mean, this was the mother. And the court just stripped her from that child. Definitely that needs to be to the forefront. And then I wish maybe some more advocates from the right would bring that up and stir it up and see if there could make some changes.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, I also, speaking of people I know, I mean, I know people who spend hundreds of thousands of dollars going to China and adopting from Russia, and it's kind of like, you know, it's crazy. You're absolutely right. We have this abortion epidemic here, and the reason why people aren't adopting is because who wants to put themselves through that kind of heartache and lose the child 3 or 4 years down the road? So it really is a catch-22. But, Lori, I want to take a quick break. And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about some of the other influences in your book in terms of the three authors, and as well as the Bible, and kind of talk about that and as well as some other things. So hang in there with me. I just want to take a really quick break, and we'll be back after these messages.
Sunday evenings at 7 o'clock Eastern, tune in to Right Stream Radio Network for Just Believe with author and metaphysician Lisa Tarvis. Lisa interviews experts in the areas of health and wellness, alternative healing, paranormal phenomena, intuitive guidance, and positive living. With her own inimitable down-to-earth style, Lisa makes both guests and callers welcome and appreciated. Just Believe with Lisa Tarvis, Sunday evenings at 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 Central, here on the Right Stream Radio Network. Monday afternoons at 1 o'clock Eastern on the Right Stream Radio Network. Tune in to Military Monday with host John D. Gresham, author, military historian, and journalist. John delves into a unique aspect of U.S. military history, as well as current events and issues affecting our men and women in uniform. Featuring exceptional guests, military experts, and authors, Military Monday with John D. Gresham entertains, informs, and encourages listeners to support those who put it all on the line for freedom. Military Monday with John D. Gresham, Monday afternoons at 1 o'clock Eastern on the Right Stream Radio Network.
You're listening to the Right Stream Radio Network, rejoicing in the flow of creativity. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at RightStream and hashtag RightStream. Thanks for listening to the RightStream Radio Network.
Okay, and we are back, and you are listening to RightStream Tuesday. This is Daria Ann with my guest, Lori Colombo Dunham. And Lori, I know your time is limited, so I wanted to just talk a little bit now about, you know, some of the influences in your personal history that we incorporated into the book. Of course, I'm talking about John Gray, Stormy O'Martian, and Dr. Laura. So tell us a little bit about how they influenced your life and why you wanted to include them in the book.
Well, once I realized what was going on with my marriage, it was spinning out of control. I couldn't take much more of it. I figured something has to be done. Either I'm out of here or something has to work. And I just did pretty much, I think the most natural thing I think anyone would do is, you know, try to do those self-help resource books. And I had John Gray, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, up in my closet or on the bookshelf. And I worked in sales, so I had a lot of relationships with men. So I had that book for all the men in my life through work and personal and try to understand who they are. I pulled it off the shelf, and I was rereading it, and I started implementing some of the scenarios in there. And then I figured, well, this is my marriage. So my mother would be my first source. However, Dr. Laura was someone my mother listened to regularly. And my mother and Dr. Laura were pretty much, you know, on the same page, and I was right there with them. So that was another resource that I was able to pick up from. And then, and I was working through things that I needed to do. My girlfriend, who had absolutely no idea the turmoil that I was having in my marriage and our finances, she turned to me one day and she just handed me this book. And she said, you know what, this is a great book. It's called The Power of a Praying Wife. It's a great tool for everybody to have in their marriage. And she gave it to me, and it's like, oh, that's interesting. I'll take it, and I'm going to read it because I'm desperate at this point. And not really knowing what to expect for, because I wasn't very spiritual. I mean, I prayed, but I think it was very shallow praying, if that's even possible, but it was in my viewpoint. And in this book, Power of a Praying Wife, I mean, I just found it to be so uplifting and so in tune to my thoughts. I mean, there's one phase in there, and you can tell, I mean, a bitter person would almost say this, like, she says, and don't worry, you need to keep praying for your husband, and don't worry, or don't think about, well, he's not praying for me, so why should I pray for him?
Yeah.
I mean, because he probably won't, and he won't ever pray for you like you are going to pray for him, so let that go. And it's like, oh, she put me in my place, and it's like, okay. And I kind of just, like, opened my heart and opened my ears and eyes for this, and I just, she gives you details on how to pray, what you're praying for, whatever topic it may be, and I put that into practice.
And we incorporated, you know, some of the most meaningful ones into the book, and one of the things I really enjoyed, Lori, was how we did that, how we were able to incorporate all these different authors depending on what topic we were covering in the story. And I just think it really enhances, you know, as a reader, I mean, it enhances the experience, but it also helps a reader to fully understand exactly what you were going through in that moment. And it's such an inspiration to me, and it really is a testament to the power of prayer.
You know, and there's no question. I mean, and a person who's not spiritual, I mean, I'll say, okay, so the prayer may not work for you, but how's your goals? How are your goal settings, and are you writing them out, and are you focused on that? Because, I mean, somehow you have to put out there what you're looking for and what you want and need. I mean, you have to just give it up and have someone else take it and go along for the ride. But no question, it was definitely these books that made the most sense for me. As a writer, I wanted to give my readers a resource. I want them to have something that they can walk away with and say, okay, I can use this, and this, or I can implement this, or that makes sense to me, and let me see how that compares to my life, or, you know, who can use this book. I mean, I want it to be a tool.
Yes, and I will say that, Laura, you also have them on your blog. People can go to reflectionsonthering.wordpress.com, and there's a link there that says resources, and we have pictures of all the books that Lori, you know, used to turn things around in her life, and as well as links back to each author's website. So definitely check that out. And Lori, the other thing I like that you wanted to include in there were, you know, at the end of each section, we included reader notes, you know, my reflections. And you also have, well, first, let me back up. At the end of each section, you have your own reflections on the ring. It's a little bulleted list of things you learned based on the material that was included in that particular section of the book, and then a section where people can write their own notes. So it really is almost like a little mini workbook, as well as an interesting kind of fun narrative that brings out all of these important points.
Absolutely, and that was definitely, you know, something I had envisioned from the very beginning, was to have it be entertaining, resourceful, and spiritual. And I have to say, I'm very happy, you know, how it all came out. I mean, you helped me with the layout and keeping focused on how to execute it. And it's great. And I love the fact that, you know what, it's a quick read. It's very practical. It's entertaining, and it's a quick read. So, you know.
Yeah, and it's a book that
read it and use it.
Exactly, it's something that people can go back to again and again as a resource. I mean, you talk about the other authors being resources, and your book itself is also a resource. I mean, I can picture it on somebody's nightstand, and I could see myself putting little notes in there and kind of, you know, having it there to refer back to time and time again. And I also love that you wanted to include the Dunham Family Goal Sheet, which is also at the end of the book.
You know, I make my niece, I mean, my niece came down here to study her, her nursing board exam, and she's not a great test taker. You know, she had to pass this nursing exam, and we sat her down, and it's like, this is what we do, and it was so cute, because the first, you know, what 10 things are you grateful for? I think she came up with 2, and we're laughing at her. It's like, oh, you got to let go. You just got to open up your eyes, you know, and see all around you. So my little 9-year-old Bianca is just showing her, what are you grateful for? And she's just listening. It's like, are you, the Bible and God and, you know, the flowers outside, the rain. You know, she's just listening, the gas in the cars, and you just ran out, you know, 2 days ago. and we showed her how to write these goals out. You know, she passed her board. It's like, all right, Marissa, see, it's working for you. Now what's your next goal? Well, I want an apartment close to work, but I don't know where I'm going to work. You know, she just had, like, was all messed up. I go, write it down. Just write. And you know what? In the end, she had her apartment before her job, and she is exactly, you know, couldn't have been any more perfect for it. It's like, you know?
Yeah.
You're a praying person. I know that, Marissa. But now you just got to complete and write out your goals.
Yeah, and, you know, I think one of the biggest lessons is we have to let God sometimes figure out the how. You just focus on what you want, you know, and you tell God and you present those petitions, and you kind of let go of how it's all going to play out exactly. I mean, I know I've learned that in my own life.
Well, there's no question. I mean, you can't just say this is what I want and sit on the couch and watch television. I mean, you have to be proactive.
Right.
But you've got to definitely lay it all out and I believe in being detailed and specific on what you want. I mean, you don't know this, but Amy, I wrote that out for many years. It's like, you know, I am married to this type of person, and I wrote down all the characteristics I wanted in my man. And you know what? It blows my mind. And my girlfriend will say, well, you got what you wanted. Because she's really finicky. I go, well, I willed that to me. I mean, you can take my advice or laugh at me, but I worked on that one. I mean, and that's why I'm so strong about it, because I can list everything that I have on how I got it.
Oh, absolutely. And then I do the same thing, Lori. But what I didn't mean like sit around and do nothing. I just meant that you do what's within your power to do, but you still let God, I think, you're clear on what you want. You work to get it, but it may not always happen the way you think it's going to, and you're a prime example of that. So it's kind of like
absolutely.
You let go of how it all sort of plays out.
Absolutely, right. No, I agree 100%. It may not be playing out how you want. Just accept it and keep going.
Yeah, and I mean, my gosh, and you have certainly done that. I mean, it's just amazing what you've been able to accomplish with God's help. And what's Bianca's favorite quote? With God, all things are possible.
Oh, isn't she amazing? She is. She's so darn cute. Yeah, she's a very wise little 9-year-old.
Yes, she is. Well, she has a good mommy and daddy teaching her too. And you know, again, I encourage everyone listening. Please visit reflectionsonthering.wordpress.com. There's information there where you can order the book. It's available at lulu.com. It's a great, like Lori said, it's a great little read. We wanted it to be fun. We wanted it to be entertaining, while at the same time getting these messages across and helping people to change their own life. And Lori, and again, and I've said this before, but you know, I really commend you because you're able to do that in the book without coming across as judgmental or preachy, and just sort of as a friend and sort of like a coach is how you come across, somebody that really cares and wants to help other people.
Well, thank you, Daria. You know, I really couldn't have done it without you, so that meant the world to me. You know, and for the readers, I think it's an important read on why this was such a struggle, because when you talk about, we've always said that the premarital pregnancy is not a big deal, but if you go back and you read it, you'll see my mother's comments and what her thoughts were and what I struggled with for a couple of years that she was hounding me on. So, you know, it was definitely a mind game. There was no question on that. But anyways, I definitely, you know, I hope others will read it and pass it on to those who need the guidance here.
Absolutely. And what a beautiful thing when your daughters are old enough, you know, what a beautiful gift you'll be able to give them, too. I just think it's fantastic.
Thank you. Yeah, I am excited. Well, maybe not for that day to come.
Well, just pray about that one, too. And God will let you know when the timing is right.
Thrilled, though, I have it that I will be able to present one day. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think they will be, you know, I think they will really appreciate it, too, when they're old enough to really understand and they'll realize, you know, I think they're really going to be grateful to you for writing the story. So, everyone, please, again, go to reflectionsontheringing.wordpress.com. Get Lori's book. It's a great, with Christmas coming up, especially, Lori, it's such a great family story, such an uplifting gift to give someone, great stocking stuffer, so definitely do that. I know, Lori, I know, speaking of the girls, I know you have to get going soon to pick them up, but any parting thoughts before we sign off here for today?
You know, I just have to say, Daria, thank you for all that you've done. I mean, your patience, your professionalism, your friendship, your guidance. I mean, you're another answer to my prayers. I mean, everyone's in someone's life for a reason. And maybe 15 years ago, 14 years ago when we met, you know, why is someone in your life? There's always a reason. And I'm sure this was one of the reasons why we've stayed our friendship has been so long.
Absolutely. Well, it was my honor to write it, Lori, and it was just, like I said, it was probably my favorite project that I've ever worked on. I just really enjoyed it. And you know what? While we're doing shout-outs, before we sign off, I want to also give a quick shout-out to Carrie Lundy, who is our cover designer. She did an outstanding job, and I'm going to be doing a write-up about her on my blog, but she really hung in there with us, too, and I wanted to just acknowledge her on the air and just tell her how much we appreciated that.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
So, all right. Well, listen, Lori, you have a wonderful Thanksgiving, and thanks for joining me today and wishing you lots of success with this book.
Well, thank you so much, dear, for everything. Yes, have a happy Thanksgiving to you and all your listeners.
All right. Thanks, Lori. You too.
Right, God bless.
Bye-bye. God bless. All right, everyone, that was Lori Colombo Dunham, author of the book Reflections on the Ring, An Ordinary Woman's Extraordinary Tale of How She Saved Her Marriage and Family. Again, visit reflectionsontheringing.wordpress.com to pick up your copy today and get some as gifts. I feel very strongly about supporting independent authors, people who are putting things out there, as Lori is, you know, things that are uplifting and helpful and useful to others. And so please, you know, support this book. It's been an incredible journey. And again, like really probably my favorite project so far. And speaking of projects, I also want to let everyone know, if you are looking to hire a ghostwriter, editor, blogger, someone to help you set up a WordPress blog, perhaps train you on how to use Blog Talk Radio and talk a little bit about the importance of that to your business, whether you're an individual, a business, an author, I can definitely help. Please visit my blog at dariadigiovanni.com. In the new year, I'm going to be doing a lot of different training classes on various social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, WordPress, and Blog Talk Radio. So these do not have to be done in person. Thanks to the blessings of modern technology, they can be virtual classes as well. I can do one-on-one or group settings, so look for more information about that in the next couple of weeks, because I'm gearing up to really make that a focal point of my business in the new year. Again, I want to take this opportunity to thank everyone for their support of the RightStream Radio Network. I want to thank my hosts, my wonderful hosts, and my director of marketing, Lisa Tarvez, again, the host of Just Believe, every Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern. Also want to thank John D. Gresham, who I met on social media about 3 years ago, and he's become such a great, good friend. And when I knew I wanted to do a show on the military, John was the only person that came to mind, and he's doing an outstanding job, and I thank him for that. I want to thank Dr. Billy Eisenberg and Sheena Benjamin Wise for their hard work on Family Power Hour, which airs every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern. That's our newest show thus far. They went live in August. I believe it was the last Wednesday of August this year. And then, of course, everyone, on Friday, as I mentioned at the top of the show, Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss makes its debut with your host, Lisa Tarvez, Kristen Fetterman, and me. And it's going to be a fun sort of happy hour, you know, pour a glass of wine or a cup of tea and join the girls for some girl talk and women's lifestyle issues. And we will talk about serious things like health and wellness, fitness, relationships. But we're also going to talk about fun things like, you know, cooking and home decor and makeup and skincare and all, you know, just all the fun things that go along with being a girl. So please look for the debut here on the Right Stream Radio Network of Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss, 7 p.m. this Friday. Yes, Black Friday. Don't go shopping. Stay in and hang out with us. 7 p.m. Eastern here on the Right Stream Radio Network. And join us tomorrow for our weekly Right Stream Wednesday Twitter chat, hashtag WSW for Right Stream Wednesday. Lisa and Kristen and I will be talking about the debut of Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss. And that gets underway on Twitter tomorrow at 1 p.m. Eastern. All right, everyone. Well, for signing off now for Right Stream Tuesday, this is your host, Daria Ann, wishing you a wonderful Thanksgiving with your family and friends and all of your loved ones. Thanksgiving really should be every day. I agree with Lori. I write out all the things I'm grateful for every day. And gratitude is the multiplier of your good. So just remember that. And there's always something to be thankful for, even in the midst of chaos and tragedy. So let's give thanks for our blessings in a formal way on Thursday and continue to do that every single day. And I will see you back here next week for another Right Stream Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern. God bless.